This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, joins us every Tuesday to talk growth and development, and we must start immediately, as quickly as possible, down in the sewers of Albemarle Place, which is a county right over the city line, right? In the county?
It's in the county, at the Hydraulic and 29 North interchange.
Where the old Blockbuster used to be and was torn down?
That's right, behind the 7-Eleven there. And then it wraps all the way around the Sperry Marine facility.
Where there will be a new traffic light.
There'll be a new traffic light across from the post office. Not one further south, but up at the post office.
Yeah.
Between Comdial and Sperry.
So there'll be a traffic light at Hydraulic. There'll be a traffic light to get into the Giant shopping center there. Then you'll hit another one at the post office and another one at Greenbrier.
Well, you bring up a good point. The powers that be wanted to put the traffic light just at Sperry and share Sperry's entrance with Albemarle Place. But because of Homeland Security and all those issues, Sperry was not too keen on sharing the entrance to their facility with its neighbors. So that's not happening right now. Maybe down the road, another, you know, tenant is in that property. Maybe that can work. But in the short term, the plan is to have another light at the post office. That would be the only one added on 29. There will be another entrance to Albemarle Place that doesn't have a crossover. That's what they call where you'd put a light and there'd be a crossover on the median.
Yeah.
There will be another entrance between Sperry and the 7-Eleven. But you wouldn't be able to get to it from the northbound lanes of 29.
Oh, you'd just have to go southbound.
You'd have to go up further north and then turn left at the post office.
And remind folks what Albemarle Place is. It's one of those faux downtowns. It's like a sort of a Disney Main Street kind of look. I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it's one of those fake town centers.
Well, I think that depends who you ask. I mean, one of the ideas behind Albemarle Place is to have places where you can live, work, and play. I mean, I think that's literally what it says on their website. So it will have 700 to 800 apartments. There's some high-rise buildings there that might be 10-plus stories tall. Some of that hasn't been finalized yet. There'll be a hotel, movie theater, shops, restaurants, big box grocery store. The talk is that Whole Foods will move from Shoppers World down to Albemarle Place. At least they were one of the early tenants. But the idea is this neighborhood model that Albemarle County has talked about for a long time, mixed use. You have residential mixed in with businesses. And, you know, there are lots of concerns the public has had about transportation, now about sewer, but, you know, and affordability. Will these be places you can afford to live, work, and play, or will it be, you know, for only a subset of the population? But I thought you had a great show yesterday. And
well, thank you, sir.
I was ready to pick up the phone and call in because I felt like I was being left out. You know, you had Bob Gibson fielding all these questions on growth and development.
And Jason
Whitehead did a good job
Terrific reporter for the CIVA Weekly.
And I thought maybe what we could do is take the analysis that got started yesterday with a few good phone calls. Betty called in with a great question. Tom from Crozet called in. We can go a little more in depth and talk about the sewer issue at Albemarle Place specifically, but then also about the transportation issues. One of the things you brought up was what's going to be the impact on Hydraulic and 29. And in today's paper, we've got Jeremy Borden writing a story about Places 29, the master plan for the 29 North Corridor. And the article is saying that the business community isn't behind this yet. And they've got some concerns about the emphasis and will, you know, I guess the way they would describe it is the plan going to make 29 North more of a main street or more of an expressway? And they want it to be more of a main street. And I think these people are sort of talking past each other at the moment. So I'm hoping to present today both sides, you know, what the planners are thinking, but also some of the concerns of the business community. And I think they have a lot more in common than the public might realize.
Well, it's a good thing you're here. And we just want to remind you of the phone number. It's 977-1070. If at any point during this conversation you would like to chime in, you know that I love that. So make sure you have your phone handy at 977-1070 for questions or comments. Should we start with the sewers?
Sure. You know, Albemarle Place was rezoned and approved by the Board of Supervisors in 2003. So this one has been, and it was in the works for a long time before that. I went back and read the minutes of the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission meetings about Albemarle Place when they both approved it, and the sewers were not mentioned in the minutes. They may have been mentioned in the staff report, but if there was a smoking gun on this, I'm sure the Daily Progress or Seaville Weekly, Jason, would have already found it. So I'm assuming it was not heavily talked about or talked about at all.
Which means that they just never came up.
And the question right now is, does the sewer system have enough capacity to handle the use that would come in at Albemarle Place? As you've said, Albemarle Place is the size, has the footprint of two downtown malls. So we're talking about a lot of flushing going
yeah.
on here.
And if you've got hundreds of apartments, I mean, it's showers and cooking and flushing and dishwashers.
And it sounds like Tom Frederick at the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority is really on top of this now by all reports I've heard. And a couple years ago, they started an in-depth review of sewer capacity issues and upgrades that need to be made. It's clear we have an aging infrastructure. The interceptor line, as it's called, the Meadow Creek Interceptor, was put in the 1950s. So I think...
And that is what exactly? When we say an interceptor line?
It's basically the pipe that carries all the stuff to the treatment facility at Moores Creek. So
So it's the big pipe.
It's the bigger pipes.
Yeah. That all the little pipes go into.
Exactly.
And it is right there along 29?
You know, I don't know exactly where it runs, but it goes to the Moores Creek Treatment Facility. And the question both at Albemarle Place and then at Biscuit Run, south of town, is do the bigger lines have the capacity to take on all this new development? So I thought one of the calls yesterday, I mean, the basic questions were, who should be paying for this? Should development not be improved until somebody is on the hook to pay for it? And, you know, was there good planning going on? Why did we miss this? And I have some thoughts about that.
I like that last question.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
Well, that was Tom from Crozet. Tom said, you know, based on their experiences with the master plan and the population question out in Crozet, he's concerned that this is a pattern of things being missed. And I'm not sure I'm ready to go there on the sewer front, but the question of who pays is it's going to come down to the community as a whole, the developer, or the new people moving in, or some combination thereof. And one of the things I want to do in this segment is talk about some new ideas that are coming on the table. Tomorrow, we'll get into the details of Albemarle Place and the sewers, but tomorrow the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors gets a report on how to improve the proffer process. Proffers are those things developers volunteer to pay to mitigate their development. This is true in our designated growth areas where they need a rezoning. Albemarle Place was a rezoning. Biscuit Run is going to be a rezoning. And when there's a rezoning, the supervisors and the Planning Commission can say, well, we'd look more favorably upon your project, Mr. Applicant, if you brought forward proffers that mitigated the cost. It might be for transportation, school sites, public utilities, things like that. That recommendation tomorrow, guess what it is not going to address? It's going to put a new number on cash proffers that should come from, you know, per unit, per house in a development. And right now we get, you know, anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 per house.
Which, as we've talked about many times, is very, very low when compared to other growing areas around Virginia. We're down towards the bottom of the list in terms of what we get for proffers.
That's right. And I've said that in the past by comparing us to places like Loudoun County. And have been challenged
or even Orange County.
And have been, you know, I've been challenged a little bit about those numbers. And is that a fair comparison? And I guess one thing I'm pleased to say is this report backs up that information that I've been presenting in that they are recommending much higher numbers per household because they are factoring in transportation for the first time, but only a part of transportation. So the numbers recommended are anywhere from $9,400 to $17,000. Those are the cash proffer recommendations per household that the Board of Supervisors will get tomorrow. But here's the kicker. For everyone who's been listening to this Albemarle Place issue and sewers and people thinking about our water supply, those proffers do not address water or sewer. And they only address a small portion of the transportation.
Why are they leaving all that out? Because obviously that needs to be... That's part of it, isn't it?
And the reason
why would we be leaving it out?
The reason they're leaving it out is that's on someone else's books. The bookkeeping for the capital improvements for water and sewer is done by the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. Its two customers are the City of Charlottesville and the Albemarle County Service Authority. it's a whole different budget process. Now, the county and city are both involved in that, but when the county goes to set up a proffer policy, it can only hang its hat on the things it's got direct control over.
But the Ravana Water and Sewer can't get proffers from the developer, can they?
No, it cannot. So then, it can only raise fees.
And then they raise my fees when they do it.
And that's where they're heading right now. Unless, you know, the powers that be, the elected officials, demand that these issues be reviewed. In the case of Albemarle Place, the evidence as I've seen it is sewers were never looked at early on when the project was approved. The good news is for the community, we've learned that lesson. It's being looked at for Biscuit Run. Again, we come back to who's going to pay for it. And I don't necessarily have the answer
to that. Whosever job it was in the county office building to keep track of the sewers or at the Ravana Water and Sewer and did not and just was asleep at the switch, that person should pay to fix it.
Well, and again,
sewers.
We have new leadership over at Ravana Water and Sewer Authority that's been doing good work on the water supply plan for the next 50 years. They're trying to get to the bottom of this sewer capacity issue. So I don't have the history. Like Jason said yesterday, I'm sort of in the same boat with him. I don't have that history on the earlier.
You know what burns me up most about it, and we've had callers on this program point this out, and I agree with them. We're going to have to come up with more water, and we're all going to pay for more water for those improvements so that we can bring more water in. But the sole reason we're bringing more water in is so that we can provide water for developers to build new homes for the folks who want to move into the area.
Yep.
So we're subsidizing, we are socializing this investment for private gain. And it's a mystery to me.
You know, the public doesn't want they recognize we're going to have new development. I think people realize people are going to move here and it's a destination community.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not one of those that says you got to close the door.
But also everyone I talk to says we don't want new development to create new problems. But we have to get to the solutions here, and that's where it takes the community working together, and there aren't easy answers to these things. You know, we can go back and say, why wasn't it looked at Albemarle Place? You know, maybe we could figure out why. We still have the same problem. We still have to address this problem.
So at this point, we know that interceptor line, that big sewer pipe underneath Albemarle Place, is too small and too old to handle what Albemarle Place, what the developers want to create there.
And the rezoning has already been approved. So there is no way to go back and get a proffer to help pay for that. Now, the developer certainly has some interest, if they want to move this project forward, to help resolve this.
Who is the developer of Albemarle Place?
This is Frank Cox's project.
I would be so ticked off if I was him or I've worked on that team. They have every right to be as livid as possible.
One of the reports said flabbergasted was his quote.
Yeah.
That's got to be very frustrating because they were starting the clearing. They've got Whole Foods lined up as a tenant. They've worked most of the blocks through the architectural review board. I mean, by all measures, this thing was moving forward.
Yeah.
But we've learned this lesson. Biscuit Run is a place where, you know, when the community comes forward and says to the Planning Commission Board of Supervisors, let's be careful. Let's make sure we're looking at the big picture. Let's make sure we're looking at all these costs. This is a great example of one of those things that wasn't, you know, a concern early on when Biscuit Run was being talked about. But now it is front and center and it's going to get the attention it deserves.
And fixing those sewers is going to be so expensive. But it still won't be as much as fixing the roads to handle this development.
That's right.
And the roads will still be even more expensive than that, right?
And we don't know the final cost yet on what the sewer upgrades are going to take. But that's something that the study is underway. We'll get that number. But they are trying to get enough of a preliminary number, I guess, to give the developers of Biscuit Run some idea of how they might help mitigate that. Now, a developer is always going to put in the plumbing, so to speak, for, you know, their buildings and hooking things up. But really what we're talking about is the downstream impacts, the upgrading things further down. The same analogy applies to transportation. A developer often proffers improvements right around their project, turn lanes here, a stoplight, make it easier for traffic to get into those shops and those homes that they want to build. They want to make their commercial enterprise as successful as possible, so make it easy for people to get in.
But the real issue is downstream.
But what about the downstream, the cumulative impact?
What about the extra 35,000 cars a day that are coming out of North Point, for example,
30,000,
and going out on 29?
That's right. And with North Point specifically, the county, the decision makers at the time of that vote, The majority really focused in on what are we getting right around the site, and let's not worry so much about what's happening downstream. The downstream bill is coming due, and we're seeing the first numbers put on this in the Places 29 master plan. And after the break, we can talk about that. But Places 29 is saying, if you want traffic to flow on 29, we need grade-separated interchanges, five or six of them, between hydraulic
that's overpasses.
And North Point.
And that's what the businesses don't like, because they see 29 becoming a little highway.
They're concerned that it would become an expressway, that it's not a main street that's friendly to pedestrians and bicyclists.
Yeah, yeah. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. We've got time for a call here. Margo's been waiting patiently. Margo, thanks for the call. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to point out one, two groups of people, actually, that do profit from all of this development are realtors and business people. And I would think that they are very pro-development.
Well, in general, I think it's fair to say. But I would also say that a lot of our developers here locally are local people, and they're citizens in the community. And, you know, based on my experience with them, they want to do the right thing. They want to have quality developments. They would very much be in favor of quality growth. Are they in this to make money? Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And it's not just the developer and the realtors, but that whole industry. You know, I think of all the tradespeople and, you know, a guy who's out there roofing or an electrician. Yeah. This industry supports, is a very important part of the economy in our community.
At the North Point public hearing, Chuck Rotkin, the developer there, did turn out a lot of people in support of the North Point project. A lot of them were realtors, they were contractors, and people that would benefit from this. I think, you know, just to close on Margo's point, I think one thing that is not talked about enough, though, is the profit margin. What we talk about, who's going to pay for this. And one of the things that's often said by the development community is, if we have to do neighborhood model development and put in sidewalks and street trees, if we have to pay for the sewers, if we have to proffer affordable housing, we're going to pass off all that cost on the other property owners, and that will make their housing less affordable. And one of the things I don't hear is, we're willing to, you know, take a cut in our profit margin. And, you know, that's their private information about, you know, how they run their business, but it's not something that you hear talked about very much.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. Margo, thank you so much for the call.
To say, well, here's what we were expecting as far as a cash proffer. Here's how much we expect you to pay for transportation improvements. And so they've basically had to look at past approvals and see sort of what the trend is. It's been trending upward. You know, maybe it was $1,000 per household for a while, and now it's $3,000. But again, that was not written in stone anywhere, and the developers would like that clarified. They would like to know what the expectation is. And the Planning Commission has sort of bumped it up the chain of command and said, supervisors, help us out here. And so in the past year, there's been a fiscal impact advisory committee. They've actually existed for longer than this project. But one of the things they were tasked to figure out was, could we look around the state at other localities and figure out a better way to set some expectations on cash proffers? They looked at Chesterfield and have based their recommendations
outside of Richmond.
And their recommendations are being considered tomorrow by the board. And the big breakthrough, I think, for us as a community in these recommendations is that they factor in transportation costs for the first time. That was not previously done. So we have this fiscal impact assessment that we make of every new development. Is it going to be a cash drain, or is it going to bring cash to the community? Supervisor Ken Boyd was on the radio this morning talking about how, you know, he wants developments that are going to have successful businesses and bring cash dollars, tax dollars, to the community. A pure residential development is a drain on our local government.
Because you got to educate their kids and you got to give them roads for their cars.
That's right. And the taxes they pay in real estate don't begin to cover those costs. So that's the good news. The good news is they're looking at transportation. The bad news is, in my book, they're not looking at water and sewer, and they're not looking at transportation with a big enough lens. By that, I mean they have limited this to looking at projects that are already in our capital plan. So the capital budget looks at major road projects, schools, public safety for the next 10 years. That's as far as we plan. Yet, we're doing master plans for 29 North, for Crozet, that are 20-year plans. So we have a 20-year master plan that lists some things we need as far as infrastructure goes, but now we have a specific set of proffer recommendations that only has a 10-year time horizon. That's a little concerning to me. Because it's going to leave off some big things. If, you know, with Biscuit Run, we're being told it may take 10 to 15 years to build it out. Well, what if it takes 15? You know, at that point, there may be some new things on that wish list. There may be new sewer upgrades, whatever it might be. And so that's a little concerning to me. The other thing is when they do look at the capital budget and they do put numbers on major transportation projects, they're saying it's hard to estimate. And by that, think about, Coy, the transportation projects we've talked about. The money comes from lots of different sources. It comes from the state, comes from the feds, comes from local government. All they are willing to you know.
Comes from the state? Really?
Sometimes. This year, not so much. But let me give you a real example. In this proposal, they've got some of the neighborhoods in the master plan for the area around Biscuit Run, and the number they've put on there is $7.6 million or so in transportation that they can say is in the capital budget over the next 10 years, things we know we're going to need to build, and so therefore we might use this proposal to say to the developer of Biscuit Run, hey, we need a proffer that's going to cover this. But we already know the VDOT has said to upgrade the three roads, Avon, Old Lynchburg, and Route 20, is going to be $88 million. So there's a big differential.
Over 10 times as much.
And they say the developer should be on the hook for $32 million of that. So the point I'm trying to make is that I don't think it looks at a big enough picture of the transportation cost. Now, maybe for the purposes of this policy, that's okay. But when the public reads about this in the paper tomorrow, you know, Thursday after the Board of Supervisors meeting, and they see some cash proffer numbers that are much bigger than ones we've ever talked about. I mean, now they're up into the $14,000 range.
Yeah.
Don't think of that as covering everything. It doesn't cover the water supply. It doesn't cover the sewer. It doesn't cover all the roads. It covers some of the roads.
I think it's safe to say it doesn't even begin to cover what the true expenses are for the infrastructure that will be required for a place like Albemarle Place or Biscuit Run. We are reaching a point here in Virginia for too long, folks. It really has been the developer comes in, they create something, and the infrastructure plays catch up. You build it, and the infrastructure will follow. That has been the Virginia way for time immemorial. It's just been the way it's always been done, but we can't afford to do that anymore because our taxes are going up like crazy, and there is a very strong anti-tax group of legislators in Richmond that aren't making it possible for us to get more money from Richmond to help cover a lot of these infrastructure costs. In many ways, we're on our own here in Central Virginia to come up with the money to do that. And you can't keep getting blood out of a turnip. These people who are paying more and more on their property taxes to try to cover the costs of paying for this infrastructure for our developers.
Well, let's come back to
it's
that.
Really frustrating.
To the fact that...
Can you tell by the sound of my voice?
I mean, you make a good point that we're very heavily dependent on the real estate property tax. But I do want to say that the tide is changing a little bit with Richmond in that we had the governor insert some language in a bill before he signed it that potentially gives Albemarle County a little bit more power to levy an impact fee. Now, we need to see if that is actually going to be able to be used and what impact it might have. But that's something that Albemarle County has been asking for forever, is to have more power to get to funds in other ways. So when we talk about proffers, we're talking about major developments within the designated growth areas of the county. When we talk about impact fees, we're typically talking about development out in the countryside where it's by right. So you have
where they don't have to get a rezoning.
They don't need a
to
rezoning.
Do something.
And right now, if you build a neighborhood out in Ivy, where I live, you don't. There are no proffers. So that means there's also no impact fee today, and that means the developer doesn't have to pay the county to get it approved. In essence, For the cost to mitigate their development.
They can just go right ahead and do it.
This law that was passed as part of the transportation bill potentially gives Albemarle more authority on that front. There's also another law that goes into effect July 1st related to proffers. And again, because of our growth, because of the profile our community has, we're getting into that to be lumped into the Northern Virginia localities that have some of these rights. And so because of our population and our growth trend, we're starting to be included. Now one of the things local government has to do is figure out what does that mean? How can we use the